Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, Certified Financial Planner Professional, and AEP, Accredited Estate Planner, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available there under local programming. Today is August 14th, 2019. Markets were down today. The Dow closing at 25,479, the NASDAQ at 7,773, and the S&P at 2,840. Our topic tonight is pension plan options and other retirement-related decisions. I do want to mention next week I'm going to have Tim Roof come on the show, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the market and the volatility that we see and this talk of recession and kind of understanding it and what it means and kind of trying to put some of it into perspective. So I look forward to having Tim on next week. So tonight, again, pension plan options and other retirement-related decisions, not just pension plans, 401ks, IRAs. We're going to talk about a number of retirement plan kind of decisions that one might have to make. And I'll talk to you about why it's important and important to understand your options. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So talking about, let's just call it retirement plan options, but kind of putting it in some categories. I want to talk a little bit about pensions. I want to talk about 401ks, some options we have with 401ks, including something called NUA or net unrealized appreciation, and IRAs. And if we have time, a little bit about non-qualified stock options, and even other retirement benefits that when we're talking about retirement decisions, retirement-related decisions, it could include our healthcare decisions, Social Security, and things like that. So I'll fit those in at the end if we have time. So let's talk about pensions for a minute, because I think so many people think that, you know, pensions have gone by the wayside. We don't see them as often. When we get hired at new companies, they don't offer pension plans. They're very happy to offer, you know, 401k plans, but don't always have that pension option. Sometimes current employees, maybe who've been there longer, might still have a pension option, but new employees may not have a pension option. So let's talk about what I mean by pensions. When we talk about retirement benefits or retirement accounts, generally, it's in a couple categories when we're employees and we have employers that provide retirement benefits. This is kind of the bubble we're talking about. And that is, we have defined benefit plans and defined contribution plans. And defined benefit plans is typically what I'm talking about when we say pension plan. Defined benefit. The benefit is defined. That is what we call a pension. The employer says, here's a retirement benefit we're going to give you. We put money into an employer, you know, stockpile to eventually pay you some benefit after you retire, you know, as because you've worked here for so long, this is one of the benefits we're going to give you. We're going to pay you a monthly amount until you die. And here is the dollar amount based on your years of service, based on how much you made. There's formulas for that. That is a defined amount. That is what we call a defined benefit plan. The benefit is defined. And so while we think so many that has gone by the wayside, I'll share some numbers with you shortly to tell you that has not gone by the wayside as much as we think. There's still a lot of people that have pension plans, defined benefit plans. The other kind of employer retirement plan that is available to a lot of us is something called a defined contribution plan. So the defined benefit plan, the employer is taking care of, and the benefit you receive is defined as some dollar amount paid monthly until you pass away, the defined benefit. The defined contribution plan is typically what we talk about with 401ks or 403Bs. And the 401k and the 403B simply are the Internal Revenue Code sections that govern the rules around these types of plans. So that's where that term comes from, in case anybody's ever wondered about that. But what is defined is the contribution amount. So it's what's defined and regulated is the amount that we can put into those plans. The contribution amount is defined, and that is a combination typically of the employer contribution and the employee contribution. Granted, some employers may not contribute to the plan. It depends on the plan. So there can be any number of different defined contribution plans that employers may implement for their employees, depending on maybe how many employees they have, how much extra money the company has to put money into a retirement plan for people. It all depends. If there's a really small company that's starting up, they may not have a lot of profits yet or a lot of extra money to kind of help fund an employer share into a retirement plan, but they want to maybe make an employee an employer retirement plan available to their employees, so they may not be able to put in, but the employee could put in, contribute. So there are defined contributions that the employer can put in and defined contributions that the employee can put in. So a lot of times when people talk about, oh, are you maxing your 401k? That's typically, that's the defined contribution account. And that's typically when we're talking about the, I think in 2019, it's 19,000 that the employee can put in. And once you reach age 50, you can put in an extra, is it 6,000 or 7,000 now? 6,000, let's say. So up to 25, I'll have to double check on those numbers. But that's the defined contribution. So there's a defined amount for employee and defined amount for the employer. So in the Department of Labor puts out statistics on retirement plans, and the most recent statistics were included 2016 data. And what I just picked up quickly was that in 2016, there were 36 million people who still have a defined benefit plan. And of that, 13.8 million people are still active. So we can't ignore that there could be pension options that people will be grappling with and trying to decide what should they do about their pension options when we're looking at those kinds of numbers. So that's why I thought it was really important to talk about retirement plan options and related decisions tonight. Now, on the other side, the defined contribution plans in 2016, we had 100 million people had defined contribution plans. And by the way, those statistics do not include single member plans. This is employer plans. And it was just shy of 80 million people who were active participants. So hopefully I'm going to talk to you about the difference and what that means too. But this is why we need to talk about these options, because folks, you got to go in informed. As I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. You have to go informed into any of these decision-making options for your retirement plans. So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. We are talking about pension plan options and other retirement-related decisions. I just described the difference between a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan and shared some of the statistics, even from 2016, that these are still alive and well. So let's talk about the pension options. And as regular listeners know, I love our websites that are provided to us that are free of charge. And one of them is FINRA.org. So FINRA, as you know, is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. And they kind of provide oversight to broker-dealers and investment advisors. And they have a lot of educational material on their website that I think is really valuable. I mean, even things about saving money and controlling debt and 529 accounts and just lots and lots of tools. And I happened upon this one regarding selecting retirement payout options and our methods. And I think it just summarizes it really well. And talking about pensions and what you need to understand about pensions, because this too has evolved over the years. I think it was back in 1978 when 401ks first came into being. So what we saw was an answer to employers who could no longer afford to continue supporting defined benefit plans. And because some of the defined benefit plans were, you know, our companies were going bankrupt, the pension plans were underfunded and causing all kinds of problems, here was an option, the defined contribution plan. So we have seen an evolution of defined benefit plans going away, going more into the defined contribution 401k, 403b plans. But what we've also seen an evolution in the pensions is in the past, you got your pension, your monthly amount. But what we see more and more companies offering so that they don't have the continued burden of trying to meet the needs of that pension annuity, you know, payout all over decades and decades, is they have now also quite often you will see pensions companies offering a lump sum distribution of the pension. So when we look at pension options, there are so many different ones, and it really depends on your circumstances. And that's why it's really important that you make sure you understand all of those nuances and options you might have. So let's talk a minute then about pensions, and I'm talking about defined benefit. So typically what we expect is a monthly check. That's sometimes the only option, is a monthly check. There are options within that, though, of what kind of monthly check you're going to get. And then there could also be the lump sum distribution. So we're going to talk about what the annuity payments are going to look like. But right now we have a caller. We have Walt from Brightonsville. Hi, Walt. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I heard him.
Hi.
And then it seemed like things got quiet.
Okay, well, I'm here. How can I help you?
I just had a question, and I have spoken to you before, and I appreciate you, you know, reaching out to us regarding, you know, helping people decide what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 64 and a half years old. I'm still currently working full-time. I work 50-plus hours a week.
Wow.
And, you know, my plan is to kind of work until I'm 66 and 2 months, I think, is where I have to work to get my full Social Security. So My question is there something that I should be doing right now? I'm getting all kind of calls from Medicare, you know, people wanting to sign me up and, you know, actually people stopping out at the house. And so it seems like there's something that I should be doing at this part of my life.
Well, Walt, you know, that's a big question, and there could be a number of different answers, but that you're continuing to work until full retirement age for Social Security tells me that, you know, and don't, you know, answer some of this. I'm just saying for your cash flow, it probably helps to continue to work. At 64 and a half, you're coming up on that age of Medicare age of age 65. Now, if you weren't working, it would be very important for you to understand what your health care provisions are going to be, what your health care options are going to be. Because if you weren't working, you would have to probably go on Medicare if you didn't otherwise have qualified health insurance coverage through a spouse or, you know, some other method. So, but if you continue to work and your employer provides your health insurance, you don't have to go on Medicare. So that's number one. So those folks who keep bugging you, first of all, they shouldn't be coming to your door. But if they keep bugging you, you can say, hey, I'm still working, not interested right now. But in the meantime, with the luxury of working, you do have a runway of trying to get the best options for you. So expect that once you stop working, you will go on Medicare. And that's Medicare Part B, and that's your doctor coverage. Medicare Part A is hospital insurance, and that technically you could still get at age 65. But if you have coverage through work, you probably wouldn't need to go on the Medicare Part A. Sometimes work with your HR people and talk to them about it. If you have to go on it, sometimes they'll say you have to go on it or why not go on it. The only trouble I ever see with going on Medicare Part A, the hospital insurance piece, is if you're still working and you are using a high deductible health plan tied to a health savings account. That, because once you go on Medicare Part A, you can't use the high deductible health care plan or the health savings account anymore. So that's the only warning I give on that. But if you're not on a high deductible plan or have a health savings account, then you may be able to go on Medicare Part A, talk to HR about that. But the regular Medicare Part B, you would not have to go on because you have qualified coverage through work. So that's the health part. And then once you do go on Medicare, you want to sign up for that about 3 months before you need it. So if you know you're going to retire at 66 years and 2 months, you'd want to sign up for Medicare Part B a few months before that. And then you'd also want to go maybe talk to someone about what supplemental insurance would be best for you depending on your circumstances, which could factor in what kind of prescriptions you are on, if you're on any, or what pharmacy you go to, what kind of health conditions you might have, that kind of thing. So sometimes it helps to go to a professional to talk about that. In I think another month or so, I'm going to have someone come on and talk about Medicare, who does do this all the time and knows all the plans and the options. So stay tuned to our lineup in the next couple months or so, because we are going to talk about that. So that's okay. Kind of the health insurance. As far as what else you have to pay attention to, if you've been saving in your 401k or your retirement plan, have you been maxing, or do you need the money for cash flow? You know, you want to make sure that when you retire, you're going to be able to live on either your Social Security or, you know, distributions from your retirement account, and that it's going to last. So you might want to do a little projection to see where you are. As far as collecting Social Security at 66 in 2 months, you could wait as well. You know, Social Security gives us a window to collect between 62 and 70. So you could collect anytime between there. If you're working, it doesn't make any sense to collect, because if you're over the threshold, there's thresholds Social Security says. If you collect early, they're going to make you pay back some of the benefits if you collect early, if you're continuing to work. So once you hit age, full retirement age, Social Security doesn't care if you work or not. You could work and collect Social Security. But let's say at 66 in 2 months, you decide you want to work even longer. You can work even longer and still delay your Social Security. You earn extra benefits on Social Security. So bottom line, what you need to pay attention to right now, think about the medical, and you've got time to think about that, but you want to make sure that you're going to have money for your cash flow and your expenses and things like that. So maybe it would help to do a little projection to see if you're going to be good to go. You know, work down your debt, work down, you know, mortgage if you have that still, that kind of thing.
Well, that's what our plans are. I mean, my wife and I, you know, we still have a mortgage on the house, but, you know, we have money in our 401ks that we plan on, you know, once I pull the plug on working, you know, that we would each go halfway and pay the house off, so then it would be just down to our regular bills and our Social Security, and I, you know, our other debt is going to be paid off by then, as far as, you know, credit card.
Yeah, Walt, what you want to be careful of, though, is you don't necessarily want to pull money out of your retirement accounts to pay off the mortgage if it's going to be a huge tax consequence to you. So even once you retire, you may not be in a rush to pay off the mortgage if it's not costing you that much, because you're going to have much bigger tax hits on that. So do some projections when you get to that point, okay? Think that through a little bit first. You don't want a big tax hit.
Yeah, you're talking, I mean, you know, I think, you know, I figured out it was going to be a little over $2,000 a month. I mean, you're talking, I'm paying, I mean, I have a good rate for mortgage. It's $900-some, but it's like if I would continue to pay the mortgage out of my Social Security, that's not going to leave me with too much more money to...
I'm going to have to take a break here, Walt, but if you take the money out of your 401k, you might lose 20-25% to taxes, so that's not a good hit either, all right? So just be careful on that. Do a little planning and talk to an advisor on that, all right?
We'll do.
Okay, righty, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Folks, thank you too. Folks, we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we are talking about pension plan options, 401k options, all different kinds of retirement decisions tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I will reiterate what I say at the end of every show, because I just think it's very important. Be proactive, not reactive. Make sure you think through any decisions before you implement them, so that you can understand the ramifications of those. I just always in my head picture following the threads. So, you know, you have a big piece of cloth, you pull the thread, what happens? It could pull the whole rest of the piece. Follow the threads. Make sure you understand the implications of all your decisions. So talking about defined benefit pension options, there could be a monthly amount or a lump sum amount. The monthly amounts is you know, the traditional pension that we think of. But before you choose the pension option that you have, because it will be an irrevocable decision, you should ask your employer to give you an illustration of your pension options, particularly if you're married. If you were to sign off on some kind of a pension option as a single life and you're married, you're going to get in trouble. You have to have your spouse sign off on that. So you want to ask for illustrations of your pension options. And depending on the plan, there could be different options. The typical options we see might be single life. That means the monthly amount that they're telling you you're going to get is just over your life, so that if you die the next day, it is gone. That's the single life option. So think about, you've worked at a company for 30 years. There's what I call the net present value of that future stream of income that they've promised to pay you, and it's worth X amount of dollars. And I'm going to say, let's pretend in my little story, it's worth $200,000. You elect a single life pension option. The next day you die, that is gone. That's the single life option. There's a single life option. There could be a single life option with the term certain. So let's pretend you are single. You are not married, and you don't care. You're going to have this pension. You live a month. It's gone. No big deal. I don't have a spouse. I don't have children. What do I care? Well, sometimes people want to be good stewards of their money. And if the value of that pension you've earned over your career is worth, again, in my story, $200,000, then maybe you don't want it to be gone if you die the next month. And if the employer provides a term certain option, what that is it might be a 10-year term certain, it might be a 15-year term certain. So in that situation, if I take the single life benefit with a term certain, if I die the next month and I took a 10-year term certain, my pension option is worth some net present value. Let's pretend it's $200,000 and my pension for the month was $2,000 and I died. Well, then that net present value is reduced by the amount I got during my life, in my story, $2,000. There's still $198,000 of that could go out term certain for the remaining of my 10-year term certain to another beneficiary. So that is something that could be valuable to a lot of people to know. It might be a 15-year term certain. So what happens if you pick the single life over a term certain is the single life will be the highest benefit. A term certain will be a little bit lower, a 10-year term certain. And a 15-year term certain would make it even a little bit of a lower monthly benefit. And that's because the company has to have enough money to pay out this term certain. So they're going to give you a little bit of a haircut because they're promising you some money over that term certain. All right, so single life term certain, could be 10 years, could be 15 years, whatever the plan offers. And that's why you have to ask for an illustration. There could be joint options. So if you're married, you could have a joint and survivor annuity, meaning my monthly amount, if I die, could continue to my spouse as long as they live. That is a joint and survivor option. You can have a 100% option, which would be, probably the most costly in my story. So let's pretend your pension for single life was $2,000 and you decide to go with a joint and 100% survivor. Well, then that annuity monthly amount might be $1,800. And I'm making this up, for 100% benefit. If I went with a 50% benefit, maybe it's going to be $1,900. See? So you don't have to take as big of a haircut if you only provide your surviving spouse with some percentage of your benefit. So the joint and survivor benefit options are still going to be a monthly amount for your lifetime. But if you die, there would be a survivor benefit to your surviving spouse, either 100%, 75%, or 50% of the benefit you were getting during your life, depending on what option you pick. And that impacts what that monthly amount that you're going to get, because there's a little bit of a cost to it. Sometimes we used to hear a lot about pension maximization, and that was where if you as the participant took a single life option and you got, let's say, $200 more than the joint and survivor 100% option, for $200 a month, could you buy a life insurance policy that would provide your surviving spouse with that benefit that they otherwise would have had? And that is what something we call pension maximization. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It depends on, the ages, the insurability, and things like that. So pensions could be monthly amount, single life, term certain, joint and survivor, and you can have some term certains on survivor benefits as well. So ask for the illustration. Occasionally, the company will also say, you could do a lump sum distribution, meaning let's not do that monthly amount. We're just going to give you the whole kit and caboodle. Here's the money. So we're going to talk about what a lump sum distribution looks like and what you have to consider with that when we come back from this next break. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Lehigh Valley weather. We're at 81 degrees with overcast skies tonight. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight. And some of those storms could produce gusty winds, mostly cloudy, with a low around 66. The outlook for Thursday, there is a slight chance of showers between 7 and noon, then scattered showers and thunderstorms afternoon, partly sunny with a high near 81. Thursday night, again a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a low around 67. The outlook for Friday, again a chance of showers around 40% and maybe some thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high near 83. Then your outlook for Saturday, chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2, partly sunny with a high near 86. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Public Radio, WDIY, and Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you very much, Neil. Welcome back to the show, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And I just want to remind our listeners that I'm also going to talk about some 401k options that we want to pay attention to and some nuances for those. So I don't want you to think the whole show is about pensions. But I really thought it was important to talk about pensions because we don't often, because I think there's just so many assumptions that they're not around anymore, but when in fact they are. So the difference between the monthly pension amount, the annuity, that's what we're going to call that, an annuity, they pay you monthly, and a lump sum distribution is that if you're doing budgeting or cash flow planning, you know how much money you're going to get every month with your pension. And that's a given, and you kind of know about it. And a lot of people feel very secure with that. Sometimes people will say, if I have my other investments, sometimes they still have a 401k, they might have Social Security, they might have, you know, joint accounts with the spouse from their savings. They might have a number of different resources to help them with their cash flow and their, you know, in their retirement years. So they might want that known, that monthly amount, and they take some comfort in that. The only caution there is typically, we don't see inflation on those. Back in the day, when I first started in this business, we'd say, oh, what's the cost of living? What's the COLA adjustment? And, you know, some of the pensions had it. We really don't see that anymore. So if the monthly amount stays the same every month, and we're 10 years, 15, 20 years, 30 years into your retirement, and we have inflation, then inflation's going to eat away a little bit at that benefit that you're receiving. All right. So that's one of the downsides of that. But it's also, you know, it could be very helpful for people who don't know how to control their spending. It's, you know, predictable. So there's lots of reasons factors you want to consider when you're deciding on a pension versus a lump sum. Now, the lump sum, what the employer might say is that net present value we've calculated for that future value or that future stream of income, but we're not going to pay you anymore. That lump sum amount, we're going to give you, boom, here it goes. And they give you that lump sum amount. And if you take it as a check, you're going to have income tax on that. But what the IRS allows us to do is to take that lump sum and roll it over into an individual retirement account. But then you're responsible for the future investment of that money. So you could almost do a break-even analysis as to what the lump sum is versus the monthly pension amount at various interest rates to see if it makes sense for you to pick a monthly pension amount or the lump sum. So that's some financial considerations. What kind of rates of return might you get? Again, it's kind of all estimating. But you want to factor in some other concerns. So, for example, we do a pension election analysis, and we will talk about income needs for routine living. Where are you going to get, you know, routine, where is your cash flow going to come from for routine living expenses, future expenditures that you may have to pay for, concerns for financial needs of your heirs, what is your level of importance for avoidance of investment risk, income tax exposure, danger of high inflation, danger of money remaining in the hands of a former employer. So there are a number of different topics that you really should gauge how important they are to you, and that would help you in your decision making as to whether or not to take a lump sum versus a pension. So, for example, when we talk about income tax exposure, if you're taking a monthly pension amount, and let's say you're also getting Social Security, that is a lot of fixed income on your tax return, which could be totally fine. All depends on circumstances and what you want. I'm just trying to give you some things to think about. You can almost predict what your income tax might be. If you have a 401k and you have to take out required minimum distributions, then that could also be extra income on your tax return. If you take a lump sum distribution and roll it over into an IRA, you may be able to control the income tax consequences a little bit more. It kind of depends. So if you were going to get a pension of $5,000 a month, which is $60,000 a year, pretty good pension, and your employer said, hey, why don't you take the lump sum, or do you want to take the lump sum, and you decide you want to take the lump sum, well, then you might not have $60,000 on your tax return because maybe you only needed $20,000 from that bucket. You didn't need 60 this year. Maybe your spouse is still working and you just didn't need that much money. If you put it into the into a rollover IRA, you would control kind of the outflow a little bit. Now, at some point, you wouldn't be able to control the outflow as much if you have required minimum distributions. But in the meantime, those still might be less than what a pension might be in the initial years. You might also have the ability to roll some of the lump sum over into, to convert it to a Roth IRA, depending on your tax circumstances. So sometimes people feel there might be some more options with the lump sum. The other factors might be if you and your spouse don't have longevity, and maybe you don't have a term certain option, and you might think you might only live a couple years because just everyone in the family kicks the bucket early, well, a lump sum distribution might look pretty good in that circumstance, because then if you have children or other relatives you want to pass your assets on, if you were to take a lump sum distribution and roll that over into an IRA, you can name whatever beneficiary you want to that. So that's another consideration. All right, so annuity options and lump sum options, lots to consider when we're talking about pensions. You want to ask for an illustration and then understand the pros and cons of each of those. And again, FINRA.org has a great article on this. It's called Selecting Retirement Payout Methods. They talk about the pros and cons of the annuity and the lump sum withdrawals. So for the pros for the fixed annuity, it mentions regular income on a regular schedule for life, no responsibility for making investment decisions, protection against termination of plan or sale of employer. The cons, they say income may be vulnerable to inflation, income dependent on financial health of an annuity provider. For the lump sum withdrawal, the pros are opportunity to make the investment decisions yourself, ability to control the assets, continued tax deferral with the rollover to an IRA, possibility of outpacing inflation, protection against termination of plan or sale of employer. The cons might be the responsibility for providing lifetime income. Cons, taxes due immediately on cash payouts, if you take a cash payout, danger of spending assets too fast, danger of significant investment losses. So pay attention to those. So let's talk about defined contribution plans. Defined contribution plans, remember I said, are typically what we call the 401ks, 403bs. You're putting money in the plan. You put it in over your lifetime. Sometimes the employer puts in. They might do a match if you put in. Sometimes they do a safe harbor match and they're automatically putting in. So that money builds up. Let's say you go to retire, or maybe you change jobs. What are you going to do with the 401k? Well, the 401k, you could do a number of things. You could take the money out, Well, then you'd have it income taxable if it was done on a pre-tax basis. That's one of the advantages of putting money into an employer retirement plan is you're putting in pre-tax dollars, not paying the tax today. But then when you take that money out, it's going to be taxable. If you took out a lump sum distribution, they had the had them write the check to you, you're going to pay income tax on it. And if you're under age 59 and a half, you're going to have a 10% penalty if no other exception applies to you. So generally, we don't see people taking lump sum distributions out of their 401ks. Typically, we see them either rolling it over to an individual retirement account. We call those a rollover IRA to, you know, show that it came from a qualified employer plan prior. So you can roll it over to an IRA, or if you are continuing to work, maybe you didn't retire, you just changed jobs, you can possibly roll it over to your new employer's plan. You have to make sure they would accept it. They have a summary plan document that or summary plan description that would tell you whether or not you can roll over 401k money from a prior plan into the existing employer plan. And those dollars are tracked separately, by the way. So defined contribution plans, 401ks, you could do a lump sum distribution, you could roll it over, you could keep it sometimes at the prior employer. Even if you retire, you can sometimes keep it at the prior employer. And in fact, I don't know if I have those stats in front of me. That's what I was going to mention, is that what I saw for the 401k plans is that in 2016, based on those statistics, there were about 100 million participants in, defined contribution plans. 82 million were in 401ks, 9 million were 403bs, and then there was 8 million in some other kind of plans. But of the 82 million in 401k plans and total participants, only 67 million were active participants. What does that mean? That is a huge difference. That means the difference between 80 million and 67 million, that is, I should have Neil do quick math for me, 15 million people. 15 million people probably are not active participants in their 401k plans. That's telling me 15 million people have probably kept their 401ks at their former employers. And hopefully you haven't forgotten about it, because that's not good, especially if they switch investment types and maybe they couldn't reach you. And what if they defaulted to an investment option that you wouldn't have otherwise gone into? So you can leave your 401k at a prior employer, whether you just leave or retire. So if you retire, you might leave it. There are reasons to leave it, though. There are reasons to leave your 401k at a former employer. That's why you need to understand your options, your retirement decisions. Some of the reasons you might want to leave it at a prior employer is, let's pretend you terminated employment. Either you quit or they quit you. And you're age 55. If you're age 55 before December 31st of the year of termination, and you have a 401k, you have an exception to the 10% penalty for early withdrawal on that. So if I am 55 and I terminate employment and I go maybe somewhere else, or I'm not working, I don't have a job. If I had to tap money in my 401k, there's an exception to the 10% penalty. We still have the income tax. We just wouldn't have the 10% penalty. If I rolled it over to an IRA, that exception to that penalty does not apply. So let's pretend I'm 55. I lose my job. I call my advisor. They say, hey, roll it over to an IRA. We've got a lot more investment options for you. This is great. And that could be. But if I'm 55 and I roll it over to an IRA and I don't find a job for maybe 2 years and I need to tap some money, if I have to take money out of my IRA, I'm going to have income tax and a 10% penalty. If instead I left it at my employer, I would only have the income tax, not the 10% penalty. So that's one of the reasons sometimes we want to leave it at the former employer. All right. Another reason we sometimes want to leave it at the former employer might be if you have employer stock in the plan. And that's got some special tax attributes that we call NUA, net unrealized appreciation. And I'll talk about that when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, there's still plenty of time. 610-758-8810 or through yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available on the website. Again, WDIY.org. Just go to local programming and Your Financial Choices and peruse the library that's available there. We appreciate you listening. We are talking this evening about pension and retirement decision options. We've talked quite a bit about pensions. We are now talking about defined contribution plans, 401k, 403b, and the options you have with those and understanding what they are. And this is really even outside of so many other things we could talk about. I'm just trying to kind of give some high-level decision makings. We haven't even talked about investment options or employer matching or maxing your 401k. I'm kind of talking about more of the retirement related decisions that you're making kind of on the later stages of your retirement life and your employment. So we mentioned with 401ks that you would have an option to take all the money out. And as I said, that would be all income taxable. If you're under age 59 and a half, that would also have a 10% penalty. But if you were to take a check directly from the 401k, because maybe you just didn't know better and you thought, oh, you've heard that you can take that money and put it into an IRA and you decide to take it as a check, that's considered a distribution if you don't do a direct rollover, like a trustee to trustee transfers we do for IRAs. For 401k, 403Bs, we do a direct rollover. You ask your administrator or plan sponsor to write the check to the custodian of the IRA rollover, if that's how you're going to do it, to avoid taxes, because there is a required 20% withholding. So let's pretend you make the mistake. You say, hey, employer, I'm done with you and I want my $100,000 out of my 401k. And just send it me the check. They're going to send you a check for $80,000 because they're going to withhold 20% federal tax withholding because the IRS says we're not going to let you have that money until we make sure you pay the tax on it. So then you talk to someone, hear a radio show and say, hey, wait, whoops, I didn't know I was going to have the income tax on it. And I didn't know I was going to have a 10% penalty. I changed my mind. I want to put it into an IRA. And I know that I've heard there's a 60-day rollover. Can't I do that? Well, okay, you can do a 60-day rollover, but you only have $80,000 because the other $20,000 is with the IRS now. Are you going to be able to make up the other $20,000? And sometimes people can't. So then you do have a $20,000 distribution with income tax and 10% penalty on that. So you want to make sure you understand all your options before you make an irrevocable decision, whether it's about pensions or 401k distributions. So be careful on those kind of lump sum distributions, different than the pension lump sum distribution that I discussed previously, where you could roll that over to a IRA rollover. All right. So I I mentioned one of the other reasons sometimes you might not want to roll over your 401k right away might be because either you want to terminate, you know, if you were 55 in the year of termination and you're not sure you're going to have another job, it's kind of nice to have that little 401k bucket there available without a 10% penalty. But you also might have employer stock in the plan. Quite often, the larger corporations will match employee contributions with employer stock. So if you have employer stock in your 401k, and we've got corporations in the Lehigh Valley that have that, Air Products, PPL, lots of corporations do that, then you have a cost basis in that employer stock that the plan sponsor has tracked for you, unbeknownst to you. They have tracked that cost basis. So if you work at company ABC and company ABC has put employer stock into your 401k, let's pretend that ABC employer stock is worth, you know, $100,000 out of your portfolio. Maybe you have $500,000 in your 401k and $100,000 as the employer stock. It's done really well for you. You've worked there for 40 years. Well, the employer stock cost basis might be $20,000. There's special rules for employer stock in a 401k. It's called net unrealized appreciation treatment. If you were to take a distribution in a lump sum, in a 100% distribution from your 401k, meaning you roll over the employer stock and the other piece, the other investments to an IRA, they let you take out the employer stock if you want, but then you have to pay tax on the cost basis. So if I have a $500,000 401k with $100,000 worth of stock in it that I'm only having to pay tax on $20,000, that might be a good deal. What happens then if I take the employer stock out and I paid tax on $20,000, I have $100,000 worth of stock, I have a cost basis in that stock of $20,000. If I sell it the next day, there's something called net unrealized appreciation, the difference between the fair market value when I took it out of $100,000 and the $20,000 in essence was the cost on it. That's $80,000 of appreciation. If I sell it the next day, I have long-term capital gains tax. That is great and way better than ordinary income tax rates typically. So that is a tax-advantaged piece of a 401k that you may want to take advantage of. But here's why you might want to keep it in your employer 401k that you've left now for a while. Maybe you weren't 55 at termination. Maybe you're not 59 and a half. So if you were to take it out early without an exception to the 10% penalty, maybe you're 44, 45 or something like that, under those ages with the exception, you would have the tax on the cost basis, but you would also have a 10% penalty on that cost basis. That still might be worth it, depending on your circumstances. So you want to investigate all of that and whether it would apply to you. So net unrealized appreciation, age 55, maybe reasons why you want to leave it in the employer plan, because you just might not be able to afford to take that tax hit today. Maybe your cost basis is $100,000 and you still love that. Maybe it's worth $500,000 and your cost basis is $100,000. You love it, but you're still working because you got a new awesome job and you're making tons and tons of money and you just don't want the tax hit on your tax return yet. You could just leave it in the 401k for a while until you're ready or until your tax situation changes. All right. What else you have to make sure you're doing is required minimum distributions. 401ks are different than IRAs. The IRAs, for the IRS looks at IRAs all as one. You can have five different IRAs. The IRS looks at it all as one, but your 401k is separate from that. So you have to make sure if you keep a 401k at a former employer that you're taking required minimum distributions from those 401ks separate from required minimum distributions from your IRAs. And that starts at age 70 and a half. All right. So we talked about 401ks. We talked about NUAs, IRAs. Just keep in mind that IRAs, you have... you could put money in, you could have a rollover IRA from former employer plans. You might have had a traditional IRA that you put money in over the years and that builds up. That's income taxable if you do it on a pre-tax basis. You may have a Roth IRA. That's no tax. There's no required minimum distributions on Roths. By the way, you could have a Roth 401k too. And the Roth 401k, if you leave, you can roll over to a Roth IRA, and then there's no required minimum distributions. But if you leave a Roth 401k at a former employer, there would be a required minimum distribution on that. Neil, did you have a question about IRAs?
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you that I have a really dumb question about it. I got remarried, and we have joint accounts at People First Credit Union. So we have a checking account there, a savings account there, but I haven't transferred my individual IRA that I started years ago. We have not incorporated it there. It's still mm-hmm. it's at another bank. Mm-hmm. It's at M&T. And my question is twofold. How do I make sure that I haven't done a will yet? How do I make sure that maybe I can make that available to my spouse if she needs it? Mm-hmm. Do I need to move it to the place where the joint accounts are?
No.
No? Okay.
No. You could have that IRA anywhere that a custodian would hold it. You could even leave it where it is. You could move it to another bank, or you could move it to a brokerage firm, a Vanguard, a Schwab, a Fidelity, a TD Ameritrade, any of those out there. You could move it through a trustee-to-trustee transfer. That way you don't take the check in hand. You basically would go to the other custodian, whether it's this other bank or some other investment custodian, and open up an IRA there. And then when you close it out, you do, it's called a trustee-to-trustee transfer. You just provide a transfer form and a copy of the statement and transfer it over. But how you get it to your spouse is you name a primary beneficiary. And I always recommend naming a contingent beneficiary as well. And what a lot of people don't realize is you can have two primary beneficiaries. So you could say, you said a second marriage, you could say 50% to my new wife and 50% to any prior children. Or you could do 100% to my wife and a contingent, if something happens to her, to my prior children.
Okay.
So you can do any kind of combination, which a lot of people don't realize as well. And even if you don't have a will, then that is taken care of. That is non-probate. You don't have to have an executor.
Right.
All your beneficiary needs is a death certificate. And, you know, in Pennsylvania, we do have an inheritance tax. To a spouse, it's zero, so you wouldn't have to worry about that. But if any of your non-probate assets go to a child, for example, there would be some inheritance tax that would have to be paid. Generally, if you have a will, sometimes it'll say the inheritance tax comes out of my residue, out of my estate. But if you don't really have an estate, then sometimes that beneficiary would be responsible for paying the inheritance
tax.
Okay.
Well, that's a relief, because first of all, I was sort of confused about whether I should move it or not.
Yeah,
but I don't have to do that. It can stay with the custodian that has it now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just need to make sure that I fill out the paperwork that says here's where it goes.
Yes, the beneficiary designation.
Okay,
absolutely.
And that can be done with that particular custodian,
yep,
as you call it?
Yep, any of them. And in fact, people who are listening, if they have not updated their beneficiaries, this is a good reminder that you should review that periodically. Because, Neil, so often we find people have still their parents, you know, that they put on 30 years ago when they started working and they weren't married and had kids. People just set it and forget it. So there's a lot of advantages to setting and forgetting, but we can't forget about updating our beneficiaries.
Except when you completely forget it.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
No advantage there at all.
That's right.
Well, thank you for answering that.
Okay, thank you for the question.
I get to participate. It's
yes,
nice,
and I appreciate that. So in talking about IRAs, folks, just keep in mind, I mentioned about the required minimum distributions, beneficiary designations. I think that's a great reminder. And if you understand the rules behind taking money out of IRAs, especially if you're pre-age 59 and a half. Once you're age 59 and a half, there you can take money out of your retirement account, out of your IRA. A 401k, you may not be able to, because your employer may not have that, provide for that. It's called in-service distribution from a 401k. IRAs, once we're 59 and a half, we can take it out, but you just have to remember we're going to have income tax. If you're pre-age 59 and a half, there may be some exceptions to penalties if you're desperate. All right. Still love Roth IRAs. Didn't get to talk about those. So on another show in the future, we will talk about some of the other retirement related decisions that we couldn't discussed tonight, things like non-qualified stock options, healthcare options. We did touch on that a little bit with Walt earlier this evening, and Social Security as well. Next week, I'm going to have Tim Roof come on. We're going to talk about volatility in the markets and helping to understand what all of this means when we talk about inversion and, you know, the Fed and the rates and recession. And what does that all mean? Try to put it in perspective for you. I think it's really important. So Tim has volunteered to come on and talk about that next week. We have Tom Druckenmiller coming up next in the tradition folk music. I want to thank Lori and Neil for being here, and thank you listeners and callers for calling in. I appreciate it. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.
You're listening to WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio at 88.1 FM in Allentown, Bethlehem, and on Translators 93.9 East in Phillipsburg and 93.7 Fogelsville and Trexlertown.